You're listening to the Namely Marley Podcast, episode number 47. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Namely Marley Podcast. I'm your host, Marley. I'm so glad to be with you here today. You know, the goal of this podcast is to focus on adding a little creative, healthy, and passion-filled living to your day every day. Before we get started on today's show, let's talk about comforters. I don't know that I really thought too much about the comforters on my bed. I don't know if you have either, but a lot of comforters are made with a product called down. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically the undercoating of waterfowl. That's geese. And, you know, we live on a lake neighborhood, so I see a lot of waterfowl, and just kind of breaks my heart to think about, you know, the feathers that are taken from those geese to make comforters and jackets and things like that. I read up a little bit about down. 80% of the down used globally is collected in China, and most of it is collected in a very disturbing way. It's called live plucking, and you can just, you know, imagine what that is, right? They actually, the animal is, their legs are strapped together so they can't resist, and they basically turn them over and pluck the feathers, you know, out of the goose. It's just terrible. I watched it so that I could, you know, really understand, you know, I think it's really important to know when you buy a product what's in it. And I was very, very sad to see that this kind of thing goes on, and there's really no way to tell when you're buying down whether it's been live plucked or not. I'm going to leave a link in the show notes page so you can take a look at it. It's a CBS News article. Listen, I really do think it's important to know what it is that you're buying, and to know, you know, if you're causing animals harm in the process of that, or if you're causing animals undue distress. I just know that it makes me so happy to be able to talk with you today about Charm Sleep comforters, because their comforters replicate that high loft soft, you know, it's like a give and take feel that you have to down. But they did their research, those people at Charm Sleep, and they tested a lot of materials, and they landed on a textile fiber that's made from eucalyptus trees. You wouldn't know it to be. I mean, sometimes I feel like eucalyptus has like a smell, but there's no smell to the comforter that smells like eucalyptus. It's just a great product. It feels like cotton, but it's also hypoallergenic. We are loving our Charm comforter, and I think you will too. And Charm is providing something really special to the Namely Marley audience, so I'm really excited to talk with you about that. So go to namelymarley.com/charmsleep. That's one word, Charm Sleep. Then enter the code Marley on your order. That's M-A-R-L-Y. And you'll get $25 off your very own Charm comforter and free shipping and 100-night guarantee. That means, you know, if you get it and you don't like it, you have 100 nights to turn it back and get a full refund. That is sweet. Love it. So I hope you try it. I hope that you, you know, feel good about making purchases that also are in line with your goals and how you want to live in this world. Okay, on with the show. Today, I'm talking with Robin Shaper. He is author of the book Questioning Meat. You may not have heard of Robin before, but that's okay. He's actually made quite a name for himself in the Netherlands, and now he's adapted the book that he wrote to the United States market, and he's spreading that message here as well. I love Robin's approach to this book. He basically went out and asked a bunch of people about why they eat meat. And then he reflected on the responses, and he created what he calls a network of convictions. It's basically beliefs people have about meat and why they think they must eat it. You know, it includes a lot of things that you would expect, like, you know, where do I get my protein? Or there's also things like humans are more superior to animals, so it's just part of the food chain, things like that. So Robin took all of these beliefs, and then he researched them, and he thoughtfully wrote responses to each of them. It's a very thorough book, but delivered in a very digestible format with a lot of visual aids. I think things like that to help each reader understand it. I found this part really surprising. He says that by the age of 37, the average meat eater in the United States has eaten 888 animals. He breaks that down into 843 chickens, 25 turkeys, 12 pigs, 4 cows, 3 ducks, and a sheep. Then he shows little images of each of these animals so that you can actually visually see what it looks like to eat 843 chickens. So there's like four pages of these little images of chickens, and then there's turkeys, cows, etc. So I found, you know, that just to be like, that's a kind of example of the interesting visual guides that he provides. What I find interesting about our beliefs about the food that we eat is kind of a new appreciation I have now for veganism. At least it's new to me. I just kind of came up with it. We go into our whole lives believing something just because we're told it as children. So in the interview today, I give the example of my sister telling me that gum stays in your stomach for 7 years. She told me that and I believed it. And then one day, I think I was, you know, maybe 18 or something, I had this realization that I think maybe she just made that up. And I feel like in some ways veganism can be that way about our food, right? So why do you not eat dog meat? They eat dog in other countries. And how come you eat cows, but they don't in some other countries? A lot of these things are just beliefs that we developed based on the things people told us from a young age. And how much do we find ourselves actually questioning any of that? Also, I have another aside I want to talk with you about. Did you know that the word meat didn't used to mean the flesh of an animal? Okay, so here's the story. Someone reached out to me on Twitter. They were upset about my last episode. That last episode was with Julie Pyatt. She was talking about her new book, This Cheese is Nuts. And this person on Twitter, they didn't like that vegans are using the words cheese. She felt like it should be reserved for animal products. Well, it's kind of like similar to the pushback that we've gotten on plant-based products using the word milk. So some people are not happy with something being called almond milk or soy milk, things like that. Here's how I responded to this woman on Twitter and how I feel about it. In fact, words evolve, right? In fact, the word meat meant food. That's why they used the term meat and drink. Obviously, the word evolved and now it means the flesh of an animal. And I think, you know, obviously we use it to talk about the meat of a nut too. So words evolve. And I just thought that was an interesting topic. Maybe it's something we should talk about in a future episode. But, you know, the words that we use in the vegan industry that have been used in, I don't know, typically animal-based products in the past, I think it just helps us better understand, have a common phraseology and things like that. Anyway, back on topic. So if you've been thinking about giving up meat, but then you hear your Uncle Phil say something like, where are you going to get your protein? Well, Robin gets into all of that and a lot of other things. And here's the really cool thing. You can download the book for free. He talks about why he's doing it this way. And he even tells you about how you can get your copy in the interview. So you have to listen. I love talking to people who are thoughtful about the food they eat. Plus, it's just a fun conversation. We talk about the nutrition side of veganism, and we even talk about Robin's favorite food, which also happens to be mine. So that's fun too. I really enjoyed this discussion with Robin, and I hope you will too. So let's get straight to it. Here's today's feature interview with Robin Schaefer. Hey everyone, I'm happy to have Robin Schaefer on the line today. He is author of the book Questioning Meat. Hey Robin, welcome to the Naomi Marley podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. And I'm really looking forward to talking with you because you are the author of this book, Questioning Meat. I think we're going to have so much to talk with about that alone. But first I want you to just tell everybody a little bit about yourself and, you know, maybe why it is you chose to become vegan.
All right. Well, I'm a Dutch author. I live in the Netherlands, and to tell the story about how I went vegan, I have to go back a really long time to the time when I was just a boy, because I actually decided to become a vegetarian when I was 5. I grew up in an omnivore household, and when I was 5, I sort of realized what meat was actually made of, and that there were animals being killed for me. And that was for me the big motivation to give it up. And luckily I had parents who supported me in that. And over time I just realized that there was cruelty involved in dairy and eggs as well. And so that's how I became a vegan.
It's interesting to me how some children learn that what the animal, you know, what they're eating and what it's made out of. And they're just so reactive to that. And other kids continue to eat that. I'm curious if you've had any thoughts on that.
Well, I think a lot of kids just don't really process it to the same level. Like for me, it was very visceral, and it was like maybe it had something to do with the fact that there were animals in my environment. Like my neighbors had backyard chickens, so that was for me like the main thing that connected it all. Like I saw these live chickens and I played with them, and then I went home and we were eating chicken. But I think mostly for kids, just kids are very, how do you say it? Like they're easily distracted. So they have this reaction like, okay, so it's an animal and it's crazy. But then someone points out like, well, the animal's already dead or something like that. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess I'll eat
it.
You know?
yeah, that's right. But then there are a few of us that are just very, very
sensitive. Yeah, we stick to it.
Yes. It's funny, I was not vegetarian as a child, but I was around these, I would say very controlling, okay, I'll say very controlling adults, but I did have posters of seals and things like that as a kid, mm-hmm. and my dad told me as an adult when I became vegetarian, he said, I knew you were going to be vegetarian one day. Just took me a little longer.
Yeah, but still, everyone who's vegetarian or vegan now is like at the forefront.
Of what's going to be happening.
Yeah, the movement, yes. Exactly.
I think so too. So tell me, then, so you were vegetarian at 5. Mm-hmm. When did you make the switch to becoming vegan?
Like full vegan only as an adult. I just, it was a really gradual process for me. Like, at first stopped eating meat and fish. And then I discovered like gelatin. I discovered there's vegetarian cheese and there's cheese that's not vegetarian and all of these things. And I just eliminated more and more products until I realized, and I've been almost vegan for like a very long time, because I knew there was like, it didn't really feel right, but I never really looked into the exact situation in the dairy industry. So
yeah, you know, I did the same thing. I kind of was this very gradual transition over to vegan. It was very easy for me to give up eggs, mm-hmm. but then it was like I had two strongholds, and that was mozzarella cheese and and milk chocolate. Very hard to give those up.
Yeah, exactly. But we have great vegan chocolate right now. Like
I know. And that, what I find so interesting is how malleable your taste buds are. Because, you know, I'm this person, I'll talk about gluten, for example, because gluten is something maybe everybody can relate with. Mm-hmm. I loved bread. Now, I'm not like celiac, but I just find that I feel better when I don't eat a lot of gluten. Mm-hmm. So every now and then I'll go back and I'll have regular bread, and it tastes so doughy to me. It's so weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, yeah, like you said, your taste buds are malleable, and it's just you get used to something. And like I can't imagine, like, for example, the amount of vegetables that I eat and compared to the amount of vegetables that regular people eat. And how can you live on so little vegetables, you know? And to me, it's just that's what makes a meal complete. But to them, it's like, I don't really like vegetables, you know?
Yes. You know, I've been kind of experimenting with my diet lately. And mm-hmm. I have had these things that I'm calling them cheat days, where I'm trying to be very careful Monday through Friday. But then on Saturday, I let myself, and I'm not saying like I'm not vegan anymore. I just mm-hmm. don't. I don't worry about, yes. So if we're going to have a veggie burger with French fries, with all the vegan cheese and all the, you know, fried whatever, I don't really care. That's my Saturday day. What's really strange is I actually start craving my Monday through Friday, because I feel so good on those days.
mm-hmm. that's really interesting. So in the weekend, you crave for the days where you eat healthy food.
Yes. Because my body just feels so much better. But I wonder if like every day you're eating that stuff, it becomes kind of your set point and you don't even realize how bad you feel.
I think that's definitely true. Like most people aren't all that healthy, but they don't. Yeah, they just think that's the norm.
Yeah, exactly. I think sugar is another example of that, where I was eating sugar every day. I don't eat a lot of sugar anyway, but mm-hmm. but then, you know, my Monday through Friday routine right now is to be kind of careful not to, you know, not to eat very much refined sugar at all. I mean, I try to like stick to just fruit during the week, you know, like let that be your sweet treat. Or maybe I might have a little bit of chia pudding or something like that, but I try mm-hmm. to keep it, you know, my sweets really limited. so that when I have them on the weekend, it's like, whoa, it's kind of a shock to my system.
I have the exact same thing. Like a piece of pie. I have a hard time finishing just one piece, you know, just because it's so sweet.
Yes. This is such a strange, this is like, you know, angels singing in the heavens for me, because I have always had a sweet tooth. My mom has teased me a lot about this, that I've had sweet tooth my whole life. And so for me to be like, I think I'll just have a half a piece of pie. That's just, you know, I'd want to look behind me and go, who is this person? I guess all I'm saying is it's so good to experiment with your diet. It's so good try vegetables and add them to your diet, and you're going to see how good you feel.
Exactly. It's just like the fact that you might not like something right away is not a guarantee that you won't like it if you just stick to it for a few weeks. Or
did you have some vegetables you didn't like right away and you kept trying?
I actually like almost all the vegetables. The only ones I don't really like are Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts, yeah. Those are so
good.
But
I'll eat them. But they're just,
but you don't really like them.
Yeah, they're not my favorite.
How do you prepare them?
Not really in any fancy kind of way. I just steam them.
Do you do olive oil?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that? I mean, I do speak to some vegans that don't eat olive oil. I was just curious.
No, I do. Oil is no.
And for everybody listening, it's not that it's not vegan. It is a vegan thing. It's just that it's some people try not to have oils in their diet.
Exactly. It's because of the whole foods thing.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about your book. You wrote the book Questioning Meat. And where did this come from inside of you? Is this like you had to write this book for what reason?
Okay, for me it was like, so when I was 5, I stopped eating meat, stopped eating fish. And I was horrified by what I realized. And I actually wanted to turn everyone vegetarian. And I couldn't comprehend it, why people wouldn't stop eating meat, even though they knew that animals were being killed. But I was a 5-year-old kid, so nobody really cared. So I sort of got used to the idea that people weren't, that I couldn't influence people. And people were also very, very defensive about it. So I just pretty much gave that up. I didn't eat it, but I didn't really talk about it with other people. And only when they brought it up, and even then, I never changed anyone's mind. So I just sort of accepted that. But about 5 years ago, I had this epiphany from I'm an adult now, and yes. I have a lot more persuasive skills. The world has changed. people are more open to it. People are more environmental. People are more I don't know. They're just more open to it. So I thought, well, why not give it another shot? And basically, I just started talking about it again, and this time around, I realized that people were way more open to what I had to say, and they were actually responding quite positively. And I changed a few people's minds, a lot of people actually, in my direct environment, and that was for me the main reason to write this book, because I wanted to get the message out, and now that I knew that I had a way to appeal to people and to get through to them, I couldn't resist writing this book.
Well, and it probably also helps that you're walking the walk, right? I mean, they see in your life that you're doing these things and you're healthy. And I think people want to be healthy. They want to feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I imagine that your message meant more to them from that perspective, because they could see that you were actually doing this.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. They've seen me doing this for decades. But
I see.
I think the main difference is just that I just opened up about it, about my thoughts about it. And like before, I was just I had this idea like eating meat is bad, and if you can't see that, then there's no way I can ever get through to you. I just sort of dropped that whole narrative I had in my mind, and I just started basically questioning people about their reasons to eat it, and more trying just to listen and to understand why they were eating it. And along the way, I realized that just listening to people is like half the process.
Interesting. So you would actually ask people why it is they eat meat, and then try to kind of understand that a little bit and write the book from that perspective.
Yeah, because I was so not interested in their perspective before.
Yeah.
Before this whole, I was just like, okay, if you don't care, then you don't care. But But people actually have a lot of have a lot of ideas about it, and like there's this network of convictions that basically keeps this habit alive.
Okay, I want to hear about those.
Okay, well this so we have these like people have these ideas in their mind like eating meat is natural. Humans have always eaten meat. We're omnivores. We need meat for protein. If we don't eat meat, we get, who knows, deficient in iron. Humans are more important than animals, so it's okay. It's the food chain. It's, you know, all of these real men eat meat, all of these ideas that people have. And, like, that's the combined with just the habit, like a lifelong habit, and the fact that everyone around them eats it, that just keeps this whole story alive, and this whole that's the reason they keep eating it. And if you just chip away at those that belief system, like one argument at a time, then at one point it sort of collapses, and people are open to trying a different way of eating.
So I have this image in my mind of you addressing these convictions of these, what do you call these, network of convictions, one-on-one with individuals, and at some point you must have had this realization like, this is turning into something a little more of substance. I think I could turn this into a book.
Yeah, exactly. Like I actually started blogging, and I didn't really have the plan to turn it into a book, but I just, like every chapter of my book was just one blog post, and I realized, well, there's all these like pieces of the puzzle that fit together, and if I just like turn it into one story, then it works a lot better, because you don't like my blog posts, basically all of them ended with like, okay, so that's why you should stop eating meat, and but like in a book you can have this build up and just like address each argument without ending with the conclusion like, okay, now you have to stop completely and give it up, but just
yes,
like,
I get you. A blog post needs to have some sense of finality to it, and you wanted this to be a, you know, chapter by chapter thing that continued on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me about the book a little bit. So it's called Questioning Meat, and break down how it is that you wrote this book. I mean, as far as like the layout.
Well, I basically start off with with the reasons why we eat meat, and this it's important to realize that this is a habit that we didn't consciously choose. Like, nobody decided to eat meat, we just grew up with it. Yeah. And there are a couple of reasons why we stuck to it as a child. Like, there's language, the way we use language, and the way we use language to differentiate animals from humans. Like, for example, I wrote this in the book, like the sayings we have, like killing two birds with one stone.
I know, I hate those. Do you want to know I changed that one? I say I like to bake two loaves while the oven's hot. That's my new saying.
I've also heard the one, feeding two birds with two scones.
Oh, that's good too. But all of these, like, we like to say there's more than one way to skin a cat. Like,
exactly.
What?
Yeah.
Who does that? Nobody does that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cruelty, that's being normalized by language, and also when we're talking about actual animals, like how animals are being butchered, but they're not murdered. And if you say they're murdered, like, everyone freaks out, like, no, they're not murdered, you know? But the end result is that they're dead. And we have a lot of word usage that basically disconnects us from what really happens.
Well, like saying pork instead of pig, right?
Exactly, yeah.
We're only eating pork. It's not a pig that we're eating.
Yeah.
I think people get disassociated with what they're eating.
Yeah, and if you say, like, people eat, if you use the word flesh instead of meat, then it also sounds weird, you know? Do you eat flesh? No, I don't eat flesh, I don't, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's very good.
So, like, that's one element, the language. Another element is how we have these two different categories for pets and other animals. So like how we have the dogs and the cats that live with us in our home, we give them names, we treat them well, and then we have the other animals that are basically spend their whole lives out of sight and only enter our home when they're already dead and prepackaged, and So that's another element that really disconnects us from the suffering that's involved. And there's the third element, and that's just that there's a lot of one-sided information. Like if you grow up in a world where everyone eats meat, then it's only normal that people will rationalize it. And basically like how in the media or how in the news they talk about all these diseases, but they never talk about, okay, maybe we should stop giving it up.
Yes.
It's always like this incident, but no one ever says like, okay, maybe all these incidents are connected and we should just stop eating meat.
Well, in the United States, at least, it's here, take this pill and continue with your current plan.
Yeah.
Continue on.
Exactly, yeah. And then there's also the advertising aspect. Like every company that sells meat makes money to advertise, while the companies or the organizations that advocate eating less meat or no meat, they're all dependent on voluntary donations, so they have way less money.
That's right. Yes, that's very interesting. I never even thought about that. But yes, these organizations that are promoting meat have a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, and they make money by selling meat. So it's just, yeah. And there's no, like if you sell vegetables, you're not going to advertise against meat. You're just going to advertise your vegetables.
Yes, exactly. So that kind of lets that narrative stay alive.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's like the first chapter of my book. And that's where I lay all this out. And then basically after that, I go chapter by chapter. I just start with the story that we all have, or we don't all have in our mind, but a lot of people have in their mind, like the things I just mentioned, like eating meat is natural and we need it for protein, all of that. And then I just address all these arguments one by one in my book, and I show what's fact and what's fiction.
And it's very thorough.
Thank you.
Yes. I mean, I think that you go through these and break them down in such a... it's like you were saying, like you were talking about these network of convictions. Mm-hmm. What I find, first of all, interesting is that it seems like you could have written that list here as well as over there. So these are kind of beliefs that a lot of people have. And then you're kind of writing and a response to those convictions are just very structured. I think it's a thing that a lot of people will be able to take in.
Yeah, I think it's important to like take them seriously, you know, like so that's what I try to do. Like is there truth to this? And if there's truth, then just admit it and show what's correct about it. But it's often just a mixture of like fact and fiction. And if you just separate those two and just show like, okay, this part, like it's true that humans have eaten meat since humans existed, but that's not really an argument to continue doing it like forever. And like all of these arguments, you just,
So what about in the Netherlands, do you have animal, you know, factory farming like we have here?
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Oh, it's so terrible. I just don't understand how that's become a worldwide thing. It's just terrible.
Yeah, it's just, as I described in the book, it's, like part of the industrial revolution, actually, or the agricultural revolution. Like at some point, at one point, it was rather balanced, and then all of humanity just moved to the city, started working in factories, and like the livestock and the crops just got separated, and they just turned it into this machine, like the most efficient way to produce the most amount of meat.
Yes, and it seems to me that, you know, there was a day where farmers really, really cared about every single one of their animals because there was such a value to each of those animals. And they, you know, I mean, it's kind of sad to say that that's the dollar number was what made them care for them so much, but I think there was some truth to that. But now it seems like those animals are so mistreated. And so, I mean, my husband and I went to Iowa last year to see family, and they had a cabin out on the lake in the middle of nowhere of Iowa. And it was beautiful until you would take in the smells. And then we realized there was pig farms all everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it smelled terrible. And just to drive by that and know that there was so much suffering going on it was not good.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like you just said, in the past there, like the animals also had a function on the farm, you know, it was just one ecosystem.
Yeah, they weren't there just to eat and get fat. They actually were moving around and
they ate the parts of the meat of the crops that
leftovers.
The humans would eat.
Yes.
And and then they would fertilize the land. So it was just this this ecosystem. And now we are growing crops just to feed them to animals who are locked up their entire lives.
Yes. Have you read Michael Pollan's book? I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's Omnivore's Diet, where
The book, but I've never read it. The Omnivore Dilemma, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. He talks a lot about how, on previous farms, the way they were run, it's like you were saying. I mean, the chickens would go out and, they would eat the bugs that came out of the manure, but that would scratch the manure up and spread it everywhere. So they would constantly be rotating the cattle between different plots of land so that because they kind of destroy the land, but the chickens would come behind them, and then that would help spread the manure and create, more grass that the cows would then be moved over to eat. I mean, it was just like a process.
Exactly, yeah. And like the way the animals are bred, like the animals we have today aren't even really the same type of animals that we used to have. Like a chicken,
yes.
like a century ago, a chicken of 1 month and a half weighed like 1 pound, and today that same chicken weighs like 6 pounds.
Yeah, they can't even hardly support themselves with their
exactly.
legs.
Yeah.
It's just they're like what Franken chickens.
yeah, really. It's
who,
it's just
who would want to eat that? I just feel like if people could see that, they would, and see all the suffering and what's happening there, they would just like, I don't want to eat that. That looks terrible.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's just from a gross perspective, exactly. It's,
yes, exactly. I think it's interesting that you point out about culture too, because, like in the United States, dogs and cats are just, they're pets and we love them. Mm-hmm. But in China, people eat dogs and we think that's disgusting. So India, they won't eat cows. They think cows, the idea of eating a cow is terrible. So I just feel like there's some cultural norms there too.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like I included this picture in my book of a Chinese
yes.
man who went to the market to buy some dog meat. But in his bicycle basket, he had his own dog, his pet.
Oh.
And to him, that was like completely natural. Like I have some dogs are for eating and some dogs are for petting. And but when we see that, it's like, whoa, that's so weird. But actually, we're doing kind of the same thing, just like with different species. Like we have dogs as pets and pigs to eat. And if we switch them around, people are weirded out by it. But it's
yes.
It's not all that different.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like it's kind of like a thought belief that we don't think a lot about, and then until the moment comes. It's like
yeah.
my sister used to tell me when I was a kid that when you swallowed gum, that it would stay in your stomach for 7 years, and I believed that for a long time. And I had this moment where I was like, oh, I bet she was making that up.
Exactly. Yeah, it's good that you're bringing this up, because it's like a lot of these convictions are like we adopted them when we were very little, and
yes.
we didn't have the critical thinking skills that we have now. So we just carry
right.
them along, and because no one ever calls us out on them, then we keep them. And
yes.
Like sometimes in discussions, people say the weirdest things, and like it's hard to believe. It's just hard to imagine that people can actually believe that. But that's only because they've never thought about it since the moment they learned it when they were maybe like six and until now.
Wow, I think Robin, you just brought up another reason that being vegan is so good, is because it kind of like, I don't know, it's like an opening, right? Like you are mm-hmm. questioning beliefs that you've had for such a long time, and it kind of releases you from all of that.
Absolutely, yeah. Like that's usually when people are a little skeptical about my book, and they're like, no, I don't want to give up meat. I'm like, just read it so you can at least think about it, at least make an informed decision that you stand behind.
Yes, absolutely. And then make your own call. I totally agree with that. But why not think about what you think that you believe, and then look at it from a different perspective and see if you can find some evidence otherwise.
Exactly.
You also bring up environmental issues, and I think this is something that a lot of people, especially today in today's environment, are very concerned about the environment. And I'm the kind of person, if I'm concerned about something, I want to figure out what I can do to make a difference. And you point out the environmental impact of veganism.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's like it's something that people are just barely starting to understand. But
Yes.
it's like if you think about it, an animal needs to eat before it can grow. And so in order to produce like 1 pound of meat, you need to feed that animal more than 1 pound of just other food. And we have to grow that food for the animals. So like if you give 10 pounds of 10 pounds of feed to a chicken, it will turn it
Yeah.
into 4 pounds of chicken meat. If you give it to a pig, it will turn it into 2 pounds of pig meat, or a cow, 1 pound of beef. So like there's it's just a really inefficient way of producing food, because you need to produce more food in order to run it through an animal to turn it into less food.
Okay, so I think that's such a really good point because I think a lot of people think of chicken feed and they don't think about it as
Yeah.
what it's actually made out of. It's like, oh, it just comes out of nowhere. Yes, but
Exactly. Like
no.
yeah, we just think like these animals are growing and it's part of the same process, but it's like the growing crops and raising animals is completely different. One is actually producing food, and one is turning a lot of food into a lot less food. Like if you look at like some of the poorer countries, there are people starving. While there are in the same country, they are growing food that's given to livestock that is eaten by people in the Western world.
Oh wow, it's definitely a very, I don't know, nauseating is the word that comes to mind, but it's a lot to take in. Let me just say it that way. What and there's
And
water
like
issue.
there's water issues. So like basically this goes for everything. Like if you want to grow crops, you need more water. So the more water you need more water just to produce the crops, then the animals need to drink water. You need water for all sorts of processes during the in the industry. And like I don't know the exact number, but it's like 50 times the amount of water
Yeah.
that you need for to produce beef is used to produce like or maybe like the amount of water that you need to produce 1 pound of beef is the same amount that you need to produce 50 pounds of potatoes.
Yes.
Like something like that.
And that 50 pounds will feed so many more people than
Exactly.
that 1 pound of beef. I mean, goodness.
Yeah,
And
and
then
that.
you also talk about the erosion of the land because of, farming animals.
Yeah, exactly. Like the amount of land that's needed is just ridiculous compared to the amount of land that's needed for crops. Both partly because it's used for because the crops are just grown to feed the animals, and if we didn't have to feed the animals, we'd need less land to grow the crops for us.
Yeah, I mean, the evidence for choosing a vegetarian or vegan diet as a way that you can have a personal impact on the environment is so huge. And I feel like if somebody is, I think it's so easy just to, you're talking about these beliefs that we have. I sometimes feel like one of those beliefs is that we can't make a difference. I just feel like this is one area where you could do this, and oh my God, think about what a rebel you're going to be to the current
Exactly,
status
yeah.
quo, and you can make such a difference and really, make your life an example for others. I just think it's huge.
Absolutely. Like this is the single biggest thing that you can do for the environment. And usually when people think about the environment, they think of big corporations polluting it, or oil,
Yes.
or things that we can't really do anything about. But like this is a major thing. It's like something you buy every day.
Right. And the other thing that I don't recall if you've put this in your book as well. I just can't remember right now at this point, but I feel like there's also this economical side that your dollar is a kind of your own vote as well too. So if you're not supporting the company, you're talking about big meat has big money. Well, if you're not buying meat products, you're just basically telling them no.
Absolutely. That's like voting with your dollar is in my opinion more important than actual voting in a voting booth. Like
Yes.
this is what shapes our world, the way we spend our money. And
Right.
the industries that we support, those are the ones that grow, and the industries that we don't support are the ones that don't grow. And
Yes.
if we just invest, like to spend our money wisely, just don't pay for things that we don't actually support, then the world would be a much better place.
So can we talk for a minute about protein? Because I know you talk about this in your book, and I do think it's the big question that everybody comes up with. Like, okay, if I were to be a vegan, where would I get my protein?
Yeah. Okay, the protein question is it does come up a lot, and it's usually just like people have this idea like protein, you need meat for protein, and that's the only source. But actually, there's protein in everything, like except for the highly processed stuff like soda. Every actual food is contains protein and contains all the amino acids that we need. So usually when the first question I ask people is like how do you know how much protein we need, and what's the recommended amount, and most people have no idea, but it's like 0.36 grams per pound of body weight, which is like approximately 9% of our diet.
Wow.
9% of our calories should come from protein, and if you look at different types of food, different types of plant-based foods, you find that except for fruit, basically every type of plant-based food has more than 9% protein.
Mm.
So it really doesn't even matter that much what you eat, as long as you eat healthy, whole food, and you'll get enough protein. Like protein deficiency is something that's just not really an issue.
It's interesting. I do think that a lot of people are so worried about protein, but in reality, I think there's actually, we're starting to show some bad health effects related to too much protein in your diet.
Yeah.
The China study is a good example of that, where they talked about, you know, the examples of, especially animal-based protein, can have some bad effects on your body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's like people don't realize that, like too much is not good either. Like we only need this 9%, and maybe a little more if you're like a professional athlete, but,
yes.
Like we don't eat twice that amount or three times that amount.
I think probably most people are aiming for three times that amount.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I have experimented with protein in my diet, and obviously I'm eating things that are like plant-based protein, like pea powders and things like that. So there's like these protein shakes that you can get in the United States. I'm sure they're everywhere, but you know, they're based on hemp seed powder or things like that. And I feel like I kind of let myself just try consuming a lot of it, because there are so many people who say, oh, more protein makes you... I did not feel very good when I was eating, I was really focused on eating a lot of even plant-based protein. I did not feel good. I think I feel better when I have more vegetables and carbohydrates in my diet and some protein.
Yeah, absolutely. And people are scared of carbs, but that's... Yeah, that's like an oversimplification, because
it is
like you have good carbs and bad carbs, or good source
right.
of carbs and bad source of carbs. Like the carbs are basically the same, but
yes.
Like if you eat something highly processed and it's like carbs and nothing else, then that's bad for you. But if you eat it with like in a whole foods product with the right amount of fiber, the right amount of other nutrients like vitamins and minerals, then it's totally fine. It's good. It's the fuel that we need.
Yeah. So like if you're looking at an apple, that apple has carbs in it. However, it's also, if you're eating the skin, it's got fiber, it's got all kinds of minerals and phytonutrients, and all of those things together really are balanced, and your body can absorb it, everything much better.
Exactly. I always find it funny when people say like I don't eat carbs, and I'm like, okay, so you don't eat vegetables? And they're like, no, but like the real carbs.
Yeah, like, yes.
Like they hardly realize that vegetables are mainly carbs.
Yes. I feel the same way about sugar. Some people will say, I don't eat sugar, but then they also won't eat fruit. And I just find that crazy that you would eliminate fruit from your diet. But
yeah.
I can understand some people with certain health conditions, like diabetes. I don't know, maybe there's some certain reasons that they'd have to avoid all forms of sugar. But I think the average person... fruit is really good for you.
Yeah, mostly it's just an overreaction. Like first we eliminate like people eat too much fat, then it's like, okay, so we need to eliminate all of the fat, and then it's like, okay, so we need carbohydrates, but it's like, okay,
yes.
Too much of this, you know?
Yes. It's like that, what is that thing where you have the balls and you hit the one ball and the other one goes the other way? Yeah, it's like we're on this pendulum going back and forth, yes. Okay, so you mentioned fat. Let's talk about fat for a minute, because you know, there's obviously some really good sources of fat in the vegan diet, and I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about those.
All right. Well, with fat, there are like the three main types of fat, like polyunsaturated fat, monounsaturated fat, and saturated fat. And like it's the saturated fat that's bad for us. And like sometimes people are like, well, is it really bad for us? Well, it depends on what you replace it with. But if you replace saturated fat with unsaturated fat, it's better for you, a lot better. And what people rarely realize is that the animal products contain a lot of saturated fat, and plant-based products contain a lot of unsaturated fat. So basically, just when people are talking about, oh, we eat too much saturated fat, we need to eat less of it, we eat too much animal products, and we need to switch to plant-based products. And that's basically the gist of it.
Well, your book has such, I love the you know, you've got these diagrams that shows, it kind of breaks down the proportion. It's like a pie chart that breaks down the amount of saturated, polyunsaturated, and monounsaturated fat in each of these. Like there's dairy, but then you also break it down by avocado. And it's interesting to see that just visually represented like that.
Yeah, I thought it was important to just show it. Because, you know, it's something we don't really think about a lot. And like every type of food contains all types of fat, but like the proportions are wildly different. And and it's just, it's kind of covered up how good plant-based products are for you in this aspect.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about how you eat, Robin. What does your diet look like on a day-to-day basis?
All right. Well, I basically eat very simple. Like I will eat breakfast, bread with peanut butter. Then I'll eat maybe bread with avocado or something like that for lunch. And then I'll just have dinner. I'll have a lot of dinner. And it's like mostly just rice with vegetables and tofu or something like that. And not really all that fancy.
So I like that you like peanut butter. peanut butter is my jam. I love peanut butter.
And do you eat bread with peanut butter and banana as well?
Actually, I leave the bread out and I just have the and peanut butter. Sometimes I'll throw in some dark chocolate chips too.
Really?
Yeah.
You eat it with peanut butter and banana?
Uh-huh. I will dip the banana in a little bit of peanut butter, and then I will dip that peanut butter in some chocolate chips. But they're dark chocolate, so it's all good. And that's my dessert. That's my dessert. I try to keep that limited too, because, you know, dark chocolate is like, could add up really quickly, but yeah, it's good stuff together.
I should try that sometime.
Yeah, you should. Watch out, it's very addicting. But I like this. It's very simple. So your goal is to kind of keep your daily diet kind of simple, and then you like to eat a little bit bigger for dinner.
Yeah, but like it's not it's not really a strategy or anything. It's just mostly that, like, I'm not, contrary to most people in the vegan scene, I'm not really a foodie. Like, I'm not, like, I like food, but I just, don't spend a lot of time preparing food or thinking about it. So, I just eat what's handy.
Yeah. Well, I think simplicity can be, you know, a really good thing in a diet. I think sometimes it's easy to strive for, you know, I don't know, like extravagant meals, but those take so much time to fix, and then I think you can easily get discouraged. This sounds very simple. I mean, you can have rice ready for the week, right? And then you just, you're really not, you know, maybe you're steaming some broccoli or something for dinner. That keeps it simple.
Yeah, like if people are really into food and they like cooking and all of that, then just, you know, go all out. But if cooking is not your thing, then I do think that if you want to switch your diet and you turn it into this whole project where you have to make really special meals for every part of the day, then it's harder to stick to. And so I definitely think that for some people, the solution is to just keep it simple and eat the vegan products that you were already eating, but just more of them.
Yes. My right now, I think it's because it's been so kind of chilly here, and now the weather is really kind of starting to feel like spring again, and so I have been having these great big huge salads. Like, I get these field greens and I just, like, you know, fill it full of vegetables, and it's very filling, and I really enjoy it. So I put some beans on it too, just to kind of make it a little bit more filling.
Yeah, sounds great. It's
Yeah.
like salads are, I don't think I don't know if I could yeah, I could have a whole meal just salad if it would fulfill me, but like I definitely like salad. It's great.
Well, and there's just so many health benefits to it. So that's one of the reasons that for me it feels really good. Now, my husband and I have we have smoothies for breakfast almost every day now, which is really funny because my husband is a super picky eater. And so he was not onto the smoothie thing at all until I introduced him to, we were watching together. Do you follow Dr. Rhonda Patrick? She's with the site Found My Fitness.
No, I don't know her actually.
She's got a very good podcast, and she goes, I mean, she's a scientist, and she goes into like the cellular level and how molecules are interacting with others throughout your body, and she goes into a lot of the science, which I don't understand, but I do get enough out of her podcasts to hear that she's talking about the health benefits of things like kale and Swiss chard, and you know, it's just amazing. For example, like Swiss chard, I believe is the one that she said is loaded with vitamin K, and the role that vitamin K plays in your diet is that it removes calcium from your bloodstream and delivers it to your bones so that you have stronger bones. So isn't that beautiful? I mean, I feel like it's so beautiful the way that plants work in our diet. It's almost like art.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like there yeah, there are so many things that to discover, you know, like how the best way to improve your iron levels is to take more vitamin C with your meals.
Ah,
You know, because
really?
yeah, because it just boosts absorption. Like there are so many yeah, so many ways you can improve your diet, and the leafy greens are definitely like one of the most healthy foods we have.
Yes. So it was really fun to get Sean, once he heard her talking about this, and she talks about the smoothie that she eats, and she really breaks it down. I'll leave the video link in the show notes page so people can check it out. It's very thorough, the health benefits. And so we started having these smoothies together every day, and now it's like, you know, it's like we crave them. We have to have those. And
Well, and smoothies are great
it's
because they're really really easy way to just you know get a lot of vegetables in without yeah without having to eat them, you know. It's like it tastes better and
yes.
it's quicker and
Yeah, you know, I know that I could spend all day talking with you about your book because there's, I mean, we haven't even, I feel like we discovered a very tiny, small part about what your book goes into. The wonderful thing that maybe people don't realize at this point is that your book is free. It's online. People can just go
Yes,
download it.
just free at questioningmeat.com.
We in the United States are scratching our heads right now. Like, Robin, why would you give this book for free?
Well, so I published the Dutch book like one and
Yes.
a half year ago, and that's like a hardcover, a real book, and so that's not free, obviously. But along the way, I just realized like I want as many people as possible to read this, or actually realize this at the beginning. But so I actually just started playing around with the price, and I noticed like if I just lower the price a bit, then more people read it, and ultimately I just discovered that that's what's most important to me, that there are no barriers for people to get the information and just yeah make a change for the better, and that's why I decided to just you know, offer it for free and yeah, have maximum exposure.
So, I think everybody needs to go and download this book. The only barrier to entry then is just to take the, you know, it's not, it's a, it's very well laid out. There's a lot of pictures and graphic images that help you. I mean, graphic as in like pie charts and diagrams that really help, I think, display what you're trying, your message that you're trying to get across. It's very easy to read. So I think that's the only barrier to entry is just to take a few minutes to read this book. And learn more about what you're eating.
Yeah, absolutely. Like just educate yourself and yeah, the important part is just to think about it, to be aware of your preconceived convictions and just yeah, just challenge yourself, find out what's true, what's not true, and yeah, what if the way you're eating right now is the way you want to continue eating for the rest of your life, or if you want to make a change.
Yes. It's wonderful. So, Robin, I love to ask just a couple of fun, quick questions here at the end of the interview, if you're game.
Of course.
So, tell me, is there one food item that's your absolute favorite? You can't live without it. What is that?
Well, there's I think like the one that's most important in my daily life is peanut butter. I really wouldn't know what to do with without
peanut butter. We're buddies here. I'm the same way. Do you?
Yeah.
And it's mostly on bread that you eat it?
Mostly on bread, yeah.
Yes. And do you use the kind that's just, you know, freshly ground, or how what kind of peanut butter do you use?
I use the smooth ones, but I like the spicy peanut butter as well.
Okay.
I don't know if you've had that. You have that over there?
I don't know about spicy peanut butter. What is that?
Just peanut butter with chili, chili is not the word. What's the word? Pepper.
Get That's, out! I have yeah. never tried that. Is it hot spicy?
Yeah, hot spicy.
Wow! I love hot spicy food, so I think that sounds very good.
Like, it's not common over here because the Dutch aren't really into spicy food, but like sometimes you'll find it, and yeah, I really like it.
I experiment back and forth between the kinds of peanut butter that are more smooth and processed and the kinds that are freshly ground. And I have a tendency to like the taste of the more processed, because oftentimes they put sugar in it and mm-hmm. a little bit of different fat. It kind of is really, really smooth. But then I really do find myself liking the raw kind too. So I'm torn.
Well, you can have both.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Whatever I want, yes. Okay, so if there was only one band that you could listen to, who would it be? Or musician?
This is so difficult. I don't know. I go in phases, you know? Like
yes.
Like when I was young, like, or younger, I listened to, you know, Metallica, I listened to Eminem,
yes.
and that sort of stuff. But like right now I just I'm more of a pop music phase. Like, I just listen to what's ever on the radio, and I just stick. Yeah, basically, I enjoy that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's what's your favorite band?
I have one band that I have listened to for so long that they really inspired me and changed my life, and that's the Indigo Girls. I don't know if you've heard of them.
The Indigo Girls?
Yes.
No, I don't think I know them.
You should check them out. I don't even know if they're vegan or vegetarian, but they certainly seem like they would be. It's two women. They both play guitar. They both write their own music. Their harmonies are amazing. And they write socially conscious music. And I think for me, it was the first time I think they began the spark of my adult waking up. I don't know if that makes sense. You know,
yeah,
like,
it does make sense. It's like...
Yes. Yeah. They have this song called Closer to Find, which is my favorite. And they say, the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. And that song just like touched me in such a huge way. And I've just been a huge fan of theirs ever since. It's great music.
Mm-hmm. I'll check it out right after this video. Right,
yeah, I hope you like them as much as I do. I could be like an evangelist for them. I love them so much. Anyway, okay, this is about you. Okay, hold on. Okay, so tell me, what inspires you?
What inspires me? Like, anywhere where I can make a change, you know? Like, for me, it's important that my work has meaning. So I don't want to be doing something that anyone can do, you know? Or like where I
yeah.
feel like this is something that, like, even if it uses my capacities, but it's just uninspiring, then, or it's just something that they could easily replace me, then I don't really see the point of doing it. But like, if I can make a difference, like with this book, and I speak at vegan conventions in the Netherlands, and like just something where I feel like I can contribute something that isn't already there. That's what inspires me.
Oh, that's very nice. So, Robin, how can people find you online?
Well, I actually like the site of the book, questioningmeat.com. That's where you can get the book. And if you want to contact me directly, you can just contact me via Facebook, facebook.com/questioningmeat.
Wonderful. Robin, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I had a really good time.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it too.
Thanks to Robin Schaber for being my guest on today's episode of the Namely Marley podcast. If you'd like more information about today's show, just head over to the show notes page at namelymarley.com/podcast. You can also sign up for the newsletter so you'll be the first to hear about the exciting things we've got coming your way. Also, go to namelymarley.com/charmsleep. Then enter the code MARLY, that's Marley, on your order, and you'll get $25 off of your very own Charm Sleep comforter and free shipping and 100-night guarantee. Hey, you know, I hope you're loving the Namely Marley podcast. please take a moment to head over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a review. You can also share this episode with your friends and family on social media. You can share about it on your blog or podcast as well. These are all really helpful and they really mean a lot. So until next time, may health and happiness come your way today.